And a good Friday morning to you, and welcome into 3D here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick alongside for the next 4 hours with you. If you're going to be out and about today, I know probably a lot of you are not, but if you are, just be careful. So far, so good. Didn't have any issues coming in. I don't know about you, Willie, coming from the other side.
No issues. No issues at all.
I don't think it's really right now. It's maybe later as the day goes along.
Yeah, because you can tell. You can tell right now it's coming down, and it's not freezing or anything, but you could tell if the temperature were to drop another 5, 10 degrees, then it could turn into the troublesome stuff. But hopefully we're staying ahead of the curve here, and we'll be able to maneuver. There's not many people out. That's what's helped.
It was pretty light.
Yeah.
We were good on the west side.
Yeah, everything's schools, all that stuff shut down. Oh, Metro.
My kids were fired up. Like they never down. Their school is usually on the we're going to stay open. We're not going to be like everybody else, but they were starting to get the notion last night, "Hey, maybe no school tomorrow. Hey, holiday on Monday. Let's just take it right on into the weekend."
Whoa.
Well, 4 day action. Yeah.
4 day weekend.
ML. Right? Martin Luther King Day is Monday, right?
Yeah.
Oh. Wasn't that the best when you were kids, when you knew the snow days were coming?
Yeah.
When you knew the next day you didn't have to get up? Oh, that was the best.
Can't beat it.
Can't recreate that feeling as adults.
Oh, yeah.
That's when you didn't have a care in the world. You knew, man, I'll get up whenever I feel like it and go outside, play, or stay inside and play. Yeah, that's a good feeling.
And just a few years ago, I used to dread it because before your kids are old enough to hang on their own, you're not worried about them being home by themselves. It used to mess up our whole day, you know, just mess with everything.
Sure.
Aaron's got to stay home from work, mm-hmm. or we've got a tag team back and forth.
How many times did the kids have to go do the show with you?
Not very often. That was like the last option because, you know, just didn't want to put them in that position. But it did happen a few times. Just, hey, you guys hang out over here. Can we be on the radio? No. Maybe a little bit. You know, maybe say hi on the radio.
They've had their moments on the air. Mahoney much more willing than Evie.
Yeah, Evie,
to turn that mic.
Evie, when she was real young, would do it.
But she really
now she's kind of shies away from it a little bit. She
really
can do it.
Never loved it though. Like Mahoney was like, "Give me the mic,"
right?
And then it was Dad bracing for, "Oh no, what's going to happen?
What's coming next?"
Kind of like when I put Hal's kids on the air. Post game, he was over there sweating. He was freaking out. I was having a good time. He was over there just like, "Oh, please, please, please don't be like Dad." I can say that because he's in Montreal. He can't hear.
That's right.
I will say this last.
You know,
night,
what we need today, just because the weather's so bad, we need a report from Disney World. We're gonna have to get a text report.
Well, this would be a time to get a nice Disney World report, right?
Yeah.
It's crappy here.
We'll effort that.
See if he can do it now. See if C-Mace is available.
Well, I don't want to. Let's not take him away from the family, but just get a text report.
Why not? Let's see if he can come on for 2 minutes.
No.
I'll ask him. We'll see what he's doing.
Yeah. Just relax. Relax.
But what if he's like about to get on Space Mountain?
Then he's going
to
say, "I can't do it."
I hope he's. He's too nice. He's too nice. Don't put the nice guy in that position. Because
I got to be honest. I saw a picture that he tweeted out yesterday, and it was a little weird at Epcot Center. It was a little awkward.
What was that?
Showing off?
What was he doing?
He was at the Norway exhibit.
Right. He spent a season in Norway.
Yes.
With Scott Hartnell during the lockout that wiped out the entire season. What was it? That season would have been 2004-05, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So he knows about Norway. So this is the Norwegian Pavilion in Epcot.
Yes.
It's back it up for a second if you don't know what we're talking about. Chris Mason, during this bye week, has decided to take his family to Disney. So he is experiencing the parks. And so we've been trying to give our best advice from here So what was he doing in the Norwegian Pavilion?
Well, first of all, it was very clear that he's a big fan of the Epcot Center. That was his deal.
Epcot is underrated. Like, it's underrated.
Yes. Yes. I mean, he was pumped. But he had, you know, he had his leg way up in the air like a gymnast. I mean, I know, you know, goalies have to be able to be flexible. You know, butterfly.
Right.
And so he was showing off. Yeah, I mean, his legs were up like a gymnast. Just go look at the picture. I was like, wow, is that photoshopped? And I'm looking at him like, I don't think so.
No, he's got the flexibility. He could, the Karate Kid move, you know, I think he could execute it.
Well, from the
looks
of that
picture.
He's got
the kind of flexibility.
Yeah, he could do it. If that's real.
The crane technique.
If it's not fake.
He has the flexibility to extend the kick high. Now I'm forgetting. What's the name of the Karate Kid? Daniel, what's his last name? Daniel's son, what's his last name? Oh, LaRusso.
Okay, I wouldn't.
Daniel LaRusso. Chris Mason could be that guy.
I was far away from that.
No?
No, I wasn't close.
That's a great movie, though. You can't go wrong with Karate Kid. See, a lot of people are home right now, or maybe on their way home, they got to deal with the kid. Pop in Karate Kid. If you're looking for a movie to, you know, kill a couple, you might. This could be a double movie day.
Throw in the VHS.
Could be a double movie day. Right? Come up with a couple of selections.
Sure.
Kill some time. Just chill.
I think that's...
You're not going anywhere?
Do you have a new Netflix suggestion? Since you were so...
Oh, absolutely.
So high on Stranger
absolutely.
Things.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Now, you got it. This one is going to... You got to be prepared to have your mind messed with.
Okay. If you have to, like, give all these disclaimers, I'm a little concerned.
No, right? No. This is just... It's going to get on you. It's well worth it, though.
It's going to get on you?
Oh, it's going to mess with your head. You're going to be thinking about this show... All the time. The show is called Dark. I feel good about my recommendations recently because now I've got all the guys in the Predators group watching this now.
Dark?
Dark. It's German. It's produced in Germany. The actors are speaking German. On your phone or your computer or whatever you watch Netflix, you can have the German with English subtitles, or you can do dubbed over in English if you want. And it's very well done.
I got a text. What is Willie on? What's he talking about? And then you got the same text.
What is he talking about?
He's asking what you're talking about. He's like, where are you going with
this? Is he not like the Karate Kid?
No. I don't think it was that. I think it was...
Epcot?
Your latest suggestion.
Dark?
Yeah. It seems a little dark.
Don't knock until you try it.
Okay.
No, just go with me here.
You're going to have to work on this. I will say this. You're going to have to work on... You sold Stranger Things.
Oh, it's...
You got to work on selling Dark.
Oh, I'm willing to sell it. It's awesome.
Let's go to Nate.
It'll win you over. It'll win. If anybody's listening and they've watched Dark, by all means, call in.
Okay.
Back me up on this. Or don't.
What season?
There's only one season. And it's not that long. 45-minute episodes. I think 10 episodes.
Okay.
It has to do with time travel. It's got a little Stranger Things vibe to it, but it's like souped up. A little more on the adult side, but still a lot of soap opera stuff. Good stuff.
Not sure there's a smooth segue to Nate in the Burrow, but let's give it a go. Nate, welcome in.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing this morning?
Good.
So with Aberg, he's performing, I think, all right. Like, you know, he's not putting up any goals like we would like him to, but I think he's, you know, defending well and he's, you know, going after the puck and everything. Is he close to be going back down to Milwaukee?
So this is not a Netflix recommendation you're making, Aberg, a new series.
No, it is not. I think he's actually
talking about a person.
Pontus.
Pontus, yeah. But that sounds like a Netflix series, right?
It could
Aberg.
Be.
Yeah,
Aberg, season
Aberg.
One.
Maybe they can make a Netflix series about Pontus Aberg.
This would be season two, right? Like last year's season one, hey, pretty good.
What would it be about, Nate? Like if you were to do a Netflix on Aberg, what would it be about?
I don't know. You know, maybe how he grew up and maybe about, you know, his hockey life.
His hockey life, okay.
Okay.
You have to work on your selling, too. You didn't sell me on it. I'm going to pass.
You're going to pass.
I'm going to pass.
I didn't have enough time to prepare.
Well, let's answer his question, because I think you draw up your plans for the season during training camp, and you're thinking, okay, if this guy could give us X, we'd be good with that. Maybe this guy's ready to break out and do this. We know we can count on this guy for this. I think Aberg was a guy that they thought would take a big step this year. He's one of the few guys that hasn't progressed the way they hoped. Is that fair to say? In the first half of the season, when you evaluate, and they've given him a lot of opportunities, and it's been mystifying. I know it's probably been very frustrating for Pontus, right? He knows he can play better, I think. The problem with sending him to Milwaukee is he's at a stage of his contract where he would have to go through waivers. You'd have to put him up for everybody to pick.
Well, they're not going to do that.
They're not going to do what?
Like, they wouldn't do that. They wouldn't risk that.
Right. I think that's why they haven't sent him down, because they don't want to lose him. They feel like there's something there.
They feel like there's something there because of his body work in Milwaukee. It has not translated to the NHL. It just hasn't. I mean, he just has not.
It did in flashes in the playoffs last
year,
right?
But this year they have done, Nate, I wish every teacher I ever had in school did everything they could possibly do to build me up and help my grades.
Definitely.
Like the Predators coaching staff has done for Pontus Aberg. They have tried to put him in every good spot that you can put somebody to try to get him going, and it just hasn't worked. I mean, he had a couple of flashes on the third line with Forsberg and Yarncroke centering that line. Like I said, a couple of flashes. Other than that, he's been out of sight, out of mind. He hasn't jump started. And in Milwaukee, he was tearing it up. It just hasn't translated yet.
Yeah, hopefully. Hopefully he'll come around soon, and the flashes will be more consistent.
Yeah, I mean, they're not ready to give up, but I mean, look, at some point you have to, like I said, if somebody gives you every opportunity, every great opportunity to succeed at whatever you're doing, and you don't succeed at some point, then it's on you, right? If they've done everything they can do, now it's up to you, and it hasn't happened yet. They're not ready to give up, but at some point, it's up to Pontus Aberg to kick it in gear, or I don't know, I guess he'll be a healthy scratch night in and night out.
Yeah, at some point we just, kind of got to cut our losses.
Remember, Colton Sissons was a healthy scratch last year for about a month. And look, when he came back, what happened?
Yeah, anything can happen.
He's never looked back since that moment. What was that, Willie, February, March? Like somewhere in that area? Middle to early March.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he came back, he never looked back. I mean, he's been a key ingredient to this roster.
Y'all have a good day.
All right, thanks. You too.
Thanks.
The only thing that could happen, the perfect scenario would be you would get past the trade deadline to then being able to expand the rosters.
Yeah.
Then you could keep they've been fortunate in which they haven't gotten into a roster crunch where they've had to make a tough decision on somebody and have to waive somebody they don't want to waive, right? They want to keep all these guys in the fold because on the long journey, you need everybody, as they showed last year in the playoffs. Like a guy like Harry Zolnarczyk, he's been in the bullpen. He's had a really good season in Milwaukee, but they haven't had to go to him, knock on wood, yet. Although if they had to, they'd be very happy bringing him in there, because this is where you build a deep roster. That's why you want to keep the Abergs, the seventh defenseman, your eighth defenseman in the fold.
Just remember, some of the cool things that happen during a playoff run is the stories nobody's ever expecting, like Harry Zolnarczyk. Right?
Absolutely.
Vern Fiddler.
Sure.
Freddie Gaudreau.
Right.
Those stories were hatched in the playoffs last year. They came out of nowhere. Like no one was expecting that to be a storyline.
And you're wondering this year, is it somebody they are thinking about acquiring, or is it somebody like Eli Tolvanen, who continues to light it up in the KHL? Right? If you look at his numbers for his age in that league and how some people who started off in the KHL and then came over have translated, it's kind of like eye-popping. It's like, wow.
Yep.
So there's a lot of
different game.
Could this guy jump in and give him a spark somewhere in there?
Different game. Got to translate back here.
And for some it does, and for some it takes a while. Yeah. But this kid's 19 or just turned 19.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he might still be 18.
So far, so good. But it still has to translate to here.
But there are scouts that now have been watching that league long enough to where they have an inkling about what will translate. You have a better idea than maybe you did a few years ago.
Who's the kid? I'm drawing blanks.
You're thinking about Steve Moses,
there,
right? The guy that just lit up the KHL.
See, you knew right away.
Yeah,
where I
knew
was
where
going.
Your mind was going. Yeah.
And we heard
and
so much happen. About Stevie Moses. Oh, my goodness, Stevie Moses. You seen it? Have you seen his KHL? Oh, my. Look at this film. Look at this. Look at him. Oh, my
led
goodness.
The league in the KHL.
And you know what?
It doesn't always work out. It was funny. A couple years ago, the Predators brought in Stevie Moses, who obviously is not Russian, but he went over there.
Well, he was great, by the way. Great to talk to.
Oh, great guy.
He was awesome.
And he led the league in goals. It was the same year the Blackhawks brought in Artemi Panarin from the KHL, another guy that they didn't have to pay a lot of money to initially. And then, obviously, they struck it rich with Panarin, and Moses didn't work out. So that goes to your point. It doesn't always translate. It's kind of like a guy in baseball from the Japanese league, right?
Sure.
There are guys that go over to Japan.
Most have come
and
over.
And light it up.
And not really succeeded.
And some come over and do okay. Some don't.
More don't than do.
Right. And I'm talking about both ways. Guys who excel as Japanese players for years and then come over to the majors. And some guys from this area of the world, right, North America, they go over to Japan. They couldn't hit a lick over here, but they go over and hit 35 homers in Japan. Yeah.
I don't know how many interviews you've done. I did two this morning in other markets, more like Patriot markets. You could tell what side they were slanted on, and it's very clear. No one, and I mean no one, especially maybe up in the Northeast.
No one.
They're all – like we played a little bit of Dan Shaughnessy, and he wrote about it. He's not the only one that feels that way. I don't know how, if you've done any interviews. The vibe I get it is the same. They all are thinking the same thing. Why do the Patriots even have to show up to play this game? Like, shouldn't they just wait for the AFC title game? Like, what is the point in even playing this? This is silly. That's the vibe I get.
Oh, there's. I don't think it's even. You won't find anybody that doesn't have that vibe. I don't think it's just New England. I think if you went to Chicago or L.A. or Seattle or Denver, you get the same vibe.
You think it's nationwide?
Nationwide.
I've done all my interviews have been more, you know, in the region. I haven't done anything like, hey, let's go out to Seattle and let's bring on Darren McFarlane and talk about the Titans and the Patriots. It's been more in the region, and so it's been all slanted toward New England, and they're basically just bringing you on to go, do you guys even – are you even going to watch? Like, is there even a reason – are you guys even talking about it? Like, what is there to say? I mean, that's – they're not doing that, but –
I guess they're bored up there because every year.
Yeah.
When's the last time? I was looking through year by year. I'm trying to think of the last time they didn't get to the championship game.
The only time that they've been, we're in this spot where they had the bye week, right? They didn't play in the wild card. I'm going off the top of my head. I believe the only time they've lost in this particular spot, their first game in the playoffs, was against. Care to guess? You've seen him at Predators games. He's here. He has a house here. You know where I'm going with this?
This is part of the last team that beat them in the divisional.
Mm-hmm.
He has a house here. Justin Timberlake.
Yes, Justin. yes. Rexy. The New York Jets.
They beat them in the divisional.
Mm-hmm.
And then they lost to the Steelers
in
the
title game.
Okay.
Championship game.
Wow.
I think that was the only time it's happened in this spot. I'm pretty sure that's right. So the Jets would be the only one that have pulled that off.
So I guess they don't mind getting cocky up there. And maybe they're just bored and they don't worry about juju or anything like that of being overconfident. I don't think it's coming from the team. It's not like they're playing off of the team. Bill Belichick, that's the last thing he will let anybody in his camp do, is to sound like you're looking past the next opponent. He's very good at that. But the fans, the media, they don't care.
No. As we've, it's been well documented. Yeah. So, speaking of that, we'll come back. We'll head up to Boston. Michael Hawley, WEEI in Boston. We'll ask him those exact questions.
Right.
Like,
this will be fun.
What are you guys talking about?
And Michael Hawley is a morning show host on probably the biggest sports station up there, WEEI. They have a weekly interview with Tom Brady. Michael Hawley's written, I think, two books on Bill Belichick. You may have seen Michael on ESPN back in the days, the early days of Around the Horn. He had a good run. He used to write for the Boston Globe. So he's multi-talented. So we're looking forward to talking to him.
If you have any coupons or Groupon specials and you're not going to use them, send them to Josh Donaldson. He avoids arbitration, and he's going to play for a mere $23 million this year. So if you got some unused coupons, send them to Josh Donaldson. He'll need them. I don't know how he's going to support his family.
The ceiling is the roof.
$23 million this year. We'll head up to Boston. We'll do that next on 3D. Former Titans GM Floyd Reese, of course, spent many, many years in New England, too, with the Patriots. Former Titans wide receiver Chris Sanders and Jared Stillman. Don't forget to check out their show leading up to kickoff Saturday evening. They will be at Drake's in Cool Springs, brought to you by Tate Ornamental and Midtown Cork Dorks. And it'll be the NFL football Saturday playoff edition from 5 until 7 p.m. Drake's in Cool Springs on Cool Springs Boulevard, 553 Cool Springs Boulevard. Back here on 3D, Darren McFarland, Willie Donick with you. And as promised, we said we would head up to the Northeast, bring in Michael Hawley from WEEI in Boston. Michael, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, fellas. I'm doing well. How about yourselves?
Well, we were talking earlier, and we were kind of laughing because we've both been doing, you know, going on shows in other markets, more markets up in your neck of the woods where obviously it's more about the Patriots. And I've said kind of the vibe I'm getting is, do you guys even talk about this game down there? I mean, are you even paying attention to it? So what are you guys saying up there?
Yeah, exactly. Look, I'm just going to be real. Don't judge me. Don't judge me. Your listeners, don't judge me. I'm just being truthful. I am saying this as impartially as I can. People aren't talking about the game, and we're going to force them today. I go on around 1 o'clock your time. I'm going to force them to talk about the game today because it's the Titans. They're 13.5 point favorites to beat them. But more than that, it's no disrespect to the Titans or anybody else in this position. Just imagine, this is going to be the 35th playoff game for Belichick and Brady. 35 playoff games. I mean, think about that. A season, two seasons, and change worth of playoff games in this run. So what happens is, it happens in the media, and it happens in the fan base, people just get spoiled. You get spoiled is an expectation that you're going to go not just to the AFC Championship game, but you're going to go to the Super Bowl. So that's the byproduct of being successful. And that sounds really terrible, and it sounds obnoxious. I understand it. If you're there in Tennessee, you hear some guy from New England talk about the byproduct of 35 playoff games, but that's what happens.
I was trying to think off the top of my head. The last time they were in this spot and they lost, I believe, if memory serves me correct, it was old Rexy with the New York Jets. Is that correct?
Rexy. That's right. Sexy Rexy. Yeah, that beat them in January of 2012. And it was the same thing. Like, well, it's the Jets. They were 14-2 at the time the Patriots were. They had beaten the Jets. They had pounded them about a month earlier on Monday Night Football. So people were looking at the Jets and like, okay, those are our little cousins. Well, they'll come in here, we'll knock them around, and we'll go to the AFC Championship game. But the Jets played well. And to your point, look, that's the kind of game that the Titans will have to play, where you don't get intimidated by the whole Gillette Stadium aura. You don't care about Belichick and Brady and the tradition. You just go in there, you have a good, solid running game. You make some stops on third down, and you just hang around to the fourth quarter. and that's how you get a win. But if you can't do that, if you can't run the ball, and if you're going to be intimidated and make silly coaching decisions and turn the ball over, well, it's going to be a mess.
Michael, Dan Shaughnessy, everybody in these parts have all seen what he wrote about the Titans is basically, you know, Cupcake City. What in the world are the Patriots? Do they even have to show up for this? Everybody is aware of that down here. He was on our morning show yesterday, and he said toward the end of the interview that he doesn't believe, even with all that being said, this Patriots team is really that great of a team. It's almost like they're doing this despite, really, I guess, the rest of the conference. Do you agree with that assessment, or where do you stand on that?
Shaughnessy's so miserable. He's just miserable. And for people there in Nashville, okay, I want to tip you guys off to something. What he said about the Titans in January of 2018, he said about the Texans in January of 2017, and, whoever their first-round opponent is, he just said the same thing. Cupcakes, tomato cans. The league's not that good. I mean, he just kind of recycles the same things over and over. And I can say this. I worked with him. I worked at the Globe for 10 years, so I know his playbook pretty well. No, I think the Patriots are good. I think that sounds like you guys probably hear it all the time too. It's like the vintage in my day. Dot dot dot. You know, people do it in everything. They do it in sports. They do it in music. They do it in movies. Oh, these movies today, these kids today, they watch this. In my day, this was really good. If you're going to look for football to be like it was in 1985 or even 1995, you're just going to frustrate yourself. I mean, the game has changed. The players have changed. It's not going to be what we grew up watching. So if you look at 2018, what's a good team in 2018? It's the Patriots. It's the Steelers. It's the Vikings, the Saints, the Eagles, if they had Carson Wentz healthy. I mean, that's what it is today. They're a good team. They're as good as anybody else in football. I mean, if the Patriots aren't good, who is?
We don't know what you're talking about. Just because we were using Karate Kid references at the beginning of the show, we don't know what in the world you're talking about.
So, I catch myself doing it too. I got to stop my. I'll do it. We all do it. Like, yeah, LeBron James. But I grew up watching Magic and Larry and Michael Jordan. Okay, we get it. You know, the game, sport evolves. The culture evolves. I get with it.
Michael Hawley on the line with us, WEEI in Boston. So the Seth Wickersham article comes out on ESPN.com. What was the reaction up there?
Oh, what you can imagine from some people, actually, let's be honest, a small minority of people saying, I knew something was going on. I knew something was off about this season, or this Garoppolo trade didn't make sense. But I would say most people looked at it and said, why did you have so many anonymous sources in there? And, who really talked to him, and how accurate is this stuff? Now, you set yourself up, I just think as a reporter, you set yourself up for that type of questioning. We don't have anybody on the record. I mean, we had nobody on the record, all anonymous sources. So even if your stuff is spot on and you know who your sources are, I mean, we live in a culture now, sports or otherwise, where the news media, I mean, you really got to have it tight to avoid people just dismissing what you have to say. And yeah, so that's the one part of the story. I'm not sure about that. And so now you set it up. Who do you believe? Do you believe Robert Kraft and Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, or do you believe the reporter with the anonymous sources? And what makes it even trickier, I work at, I have a night job on TV, so I work with a guy, and he's a Patriots, longtime Patriots beat reporter. Now, think about this. He said, hey, there's a lot of truth in what Seth Wickersham wrote, except for this small detail. I'm reporting that there was no mandate from Kraft. I said, well, wait a minute, Tom. If you're telling me you're reporting that there's no mandate from Kraft, didn't that kind of blow up the bulk of Wickersham's article? Wickersham said, Kraft told Belichick to trade Garoppolo.
And as a result, Belichick was furious and demoralized. And as a result of that, he told his friends that this dynamic was no longer sustainable. But if that part's not true, then this thing collapsed. So it's been a very controversial article. It came out last Friday, and we've been talking about it all week. We've been talking about it for a week.
Wow. Doesn't surprise me. Michael Holley is with us, WEEI in Boston, but a guy that has many talents. He just mentioned does some TV, but also a very good author. He mentioned the Boston Globe, but also has written several books on Belichick and Brady. So, Michael, let me just give you a broad spectrum here. And we've gotten some pretty good insight from Floyd Reese over the years about Bill Belichick. But for people on the outside that don't watch him every day and don't know him nearly as well as you do, what is maybe the biggest misconception about him? What do people not know about him?
He's a great listener. He's a great listener and a really he's got a flexible like spirit about him. And that would just blow you away, right? Like, he's a listener. Like, he listens to people. He's flexible. I mean, but his players, especially guys who have been with him for a long time, including Tom Brady, they go to him and they're just amazed that some of the things that he tells them, some of the advice that he gives them, the sense of humor that he has. So, I mean, I think that's one of the things that a lot of people just wouldn't expect from him. The other thing is, you know, there are scouts, and Floyd would know this, there are scouts who walk into the building. So when you walk into the Patriots facility and football operations, there's only one way in, and that way in happens to be by Bill Belichick's office. As a matter of fact, the window in his office is looking out onto the player's parking lot. What a view. So if a player comes in, no, Belichick knows he's coming in. If a scout comes in, Belichick would know that too. Not that he's sitting there looking at the window to see who's there. But there are scouts who go by his office, and he's known for just kind of jumping out of his office and say, hey, can you come here and talk to me for a second about this player from Tennessee, for example, for a college in the University of Tennessee. And the scouts will go in there, and he'll say, hey, what do you think of this guy? And if a scout is a rookie, he thinks that he's being set up for something. Like, okay, I better have the right answer because Belichick's going to jump all over me. But what he's doing is seriously just asking for it. He wants to know what people think. And that just throws people off because he's sitting there, and you know that look he gives you at press conferences, that poker face. You're like, does this guy think I'm the biggest idiot in the world? What is he going to do? Is he about to just eat me up here? But he wants to hear what everybody in football operations has to say. As a matter of fact, he tells the scouts, one of your jobs is to have an opinion. Then your job is not to have my opinion. Your job is to have an opinion. And if you're able to support it and you disagree with me, fine. At least you've got an argument, and I can see your process of how you got to your conclusion. So that's one of the things that makes him successful, and people would never guess that that's his mindset.
Michael Holley with us, WEEI in Boston. And Michael, it does look like he has a really good eye for what a player's skills will do translating into what he wants to do. And the example I want to use is Adam Butler from Vanderbilt, a guy that was a really good college player but wasn't drafted, and he's fit in and given them a nice rookie season there. What do you think, how do you perfect that craft over time, being able to find what fits in your system?
Yeah, and I think that's one of his strengths. And he always tells the scouts, don't tell me what a guy can't do, tell me what he can. And I think we could all do that in our line of work. You know, a lot of us, especially in this business, you know, we'll tell you what's wrong, we'll tell you what we don't like, what somebody did wrong. But, okay, what's do they have any discernible skills? If they do, what are they, and how do we fit those into what we're trying to do? So Belichick has always been like that, at least in New England he's been that way. And the other benefit is, I mean, let's face it, if you've been in New England since 2000, you don't really have to worry about job security. You can afford to take the long view. And the owner is not telling you, hey, you better make the playoffs this year or we're going to have to revisit something. The general manager is not making you draft somebody that you don't like. you're the coach, you're essentially the general manager, so you can just think about every aspect of the roster from the top end to the middle class to the special teamers, and he just has a sense of knowing what a guy can do. Hey, all I need you to do is be in there for two downs and two gap for me. You know, stop the run, and then we'll get you off the field on third down. If you can do that for me, you can play on this team. And so he's been doing that for a long time. I think he's actually getting better at it. I know he's talked about not wanting to be like Marv Levy coaching into his 70s, but he's 65 now, and he's still got a pretty good motor. I'd be surprised if he steps away anytime soon because he's just so good at it.
John Robinson, of course, was plucked from the Bill Belichick mold, and Floyd certainly had some influence on that. But why, in your mind, Michael, and I ask Floyd this all the time, I think John Robinson's done a great job so far, hopefully building something that's on the way up and it's going to keep getting better. But why have so few from the Belichick tree, one way or another, been able to replicate what he's done in New England?
Yeah, that's a great question. By the way, John Robinson is a great great addition there in Tennessee. You're very fortunate to have him. But I think it's easier for the team builders to do it than it is for the coaches to do it. I mean, if you look at it, you know, Thomas Dimitroff from the Belichick tree got to the Super Bowl last year, and we know what happened in the Super Bowl, but still, you know, he's done a good job in Atlanta, and then he brought in another Belichick guy, Scott Pioli, as his assistant general manager. So they've had some success together. But if you think about the coaches, there are a lot of things that could go wrong there. For example, Josh McDaniels. So when Josh McDaniels left for Denver, why didn't it work there? Well, number one, he's replacing Mike Shanahan. Number two, he's got more power than anybody else in football at the age of 31, 32 when he took over the job. It was just too much too soon for him. Eric Mangini was trying to be Bill Belichick. That wasn't going to work. You know, Romeo Crennel went to Cleveland. So even if you have some great ideas, you're with an organization that it's really hard to turn around. I think a lot of these guys, if you want to get it right, if you're from the Belichick tree and you want to match a success, I think, one, you have to know who you are. You have to know that you're not Bill Belichick. You have to bring your own personality to the table, pick the right organization, and just go from there. But I think a lot of these guys have either tried to be Belichick or have bitten off more than they can chew early in their careers.
Michael, the Patriots may win this game. Heck, they may cruise to victory, just like everybody's predicting. But all I'm asking is, I was up there in January of 2004 covering that game between the Titans and the Patriots. Very, very cold.
Oh, it was
cold,
lovely, wasn't it?
Cold.
What a lovely night that was.
I was in the team hotel the night before in Providence, Rhode Island. Look, just no funny business. Do it on the up and up. Don't pull the alarms at 3 in the morning. Just win the game on the up and up. That's all I ask.
They wouldn't do it in a divisional round, but I can't make any promises for the conference championship if they're privileged enough to win it. I mean, are you predicting a Tennessee win?
No.
Close game?
I mean, you know, look, here's the thing. I didn't think they were going to beat Kansas City, so what the hell do I know?
I think Derrick Henry can run it. I think he can have success, and if he does have a good game, maybe they can hang around. If Mariota can make a few good plays, it's just hard to see them winning. You know what I mean? Like, I'd like to see them be competitive. I think maybe they found something last week. The Patriots don't have a great defense. Fair to say, Michael, is maybe not as good as some of their defenses in the past?
Not as good as last year's. Last year's was number one in terms of points allowed. Yeah, I think that Kansas City game last week changed. I mean, when Travis Kelce was healthy, man.
Yeah.
They had no answers for him. He goes out of that game. Now you got Gronk. You got a grown up Kelce. Yeah.
So you tell me Gronk goes down the second quarter, then I'll change my prediction right now.
Yeah. It's gonna be tough. I'm not even trying to, you know, you can yell at me, whatever. I'm just not even trying to be polite. I don't think it's gonna be a close game.
Okay. Well, we shall see. We did enjoy this conversation though. Thanks for doing it.
I enjoyed it very much, and I just want to throw this out to you. Now, what would your listeners do? More University of Tennessee fans than Vanderbilt fans? I know where Vanderbilt is, but you have more UT fans?
Yeah, bigger fan base. Mm-hmm.
Okay. How do you think the listeners would be if Tennessee was Alabama, just winning national, you know, you got six national championships and always top 10 recruiting classes and all that stuff? Would they be modest? Would they be humble?
We know the answer.
So that's what it is. That's what it is. That whenever you look at these, you hear Patriots fans and think, oh, goodness, they're so obnoxious. They're so terrible. I think every fan base would be the same way with relative success.
You're absolutely right. Unfortunately, you are 100% correct, and maybe we'll get to have that feeling someday in this market. That would be cool. Hey, thanks for doing
this. Hey, I enjoy talking with you guys. Hey, anytime you want to talk football or anything else, I'm here for you.
We'd love to do it. Michael Hawley, WEEI in Boston. Good chat with him. And we'll come back and wrap up the first hour. Floyd Reese to kick off the second hour. That's next on 102.5 The Game. I'm sure everybody in this market feels exactly how that interview ended, right? We've all been around those fan bases. But I will say this, Michael Hawley's absolutely true. They're obnoxious for a reason. And I can't stand it. But let's reverse roles. If that was going on here, would Titans fans be obnoxious? Would Vols fans be obnoxious?
Even if they weren't, they'd get the reputation.
Now, we know the answer. Of course they would be. Of course.
Yeah, take any Blackhawks fans, Alabama, Yankees.
Yes. I mean, we saw from Blackhawks fans.
Sure.
For many, many years.
Penguins.
Red Wings fans.
Yeah.
Many years. Look, a high success rate. And winning it all.
Red Sox now compared to Red Sox of pre-2004, right?
Will create any good fan base, will make them obnoxious.
Cubs. Don't you think the Cubs are
a short window?
A little different?
For a long, long time.
Yeah.
Of nothing.
Yeah, it happens.
Well, I mean, I guess I'm saying to his point, let's just be honest. It would be obnoxious. You know, Vols fans or Titans fans would be obnoxious too. If we were sitting here in this market talking about Tennessee winning the national championship for the sixth time or fifth time in 9 years, or the Titans going to their how many divisional playoff rounds in a row is this for the Patriots? Lost count. What
that's
is it,
pretty 12, interesting that Michael Hawley threw out there 35 playoff games. This will be the 35th, Belichick and Brady together. So right. that's two plus seasons of playoff games, and the Titans during that span, because Belichick got there right around the time, not exactly the same year, but what was Belichick's first year? 2000 maybe? For the Patriots?
Sounds about right.
So that was just a year after the Titans started becoming the Titans. Of course, there was a couple years of Tennessee Oilers, but 99 was the first year of the Tennessee Titans, and that's close to Belichick. So they've played 35 playoff games. The Titans have played, you know, we go back through them. We know them so well because there's not that many of them. They've played less than 10.
But think about it. Most of the time, they're with the bye week. So the most you can play to get to the Super Bowl is two. That's it. This is not like, you know, the Predators have played 42 playoff games in the last three seasons. 42. Because, you know, they play best of seven
right.
series. The Patriots are usually playing two games to get to the Super Bowl, and they've played 35 with Bill Belichick. 35 playoff games. Hello.
So that was interesting to hear him say it, that they're really not talking about that game on his show that much this week. He says, I have to force people.
No, he said today I'm forcing them
right.
to
because
talk
it's
about
a foregone
game.
Conclusion. It doesn't get interesting for Patriots fans until probably the AFC Championship game because that's the standard. Most years they get there. So the division is usually a formality. And so I'm guessing up there they're talking about the Celtics and the Bruins and whatever else, right? Red Sox offseason, there's plenty of other things that we'll do it. Oh, Patriots, yeah, they're fine. They're fine. We'll talk about them next week.
Last year, they beat the Texans 34-16 in the divisional round, which I don't think that was really indicative of the game, right? Weren't the Texans in there and it got away late?
I think the Texans hung around longer than people thought.
Right. Most people didn't give them a chance, but they hung around a lot longer. Wasn't the line really high on that game, too?
Well, let's take a look. That game, if I remember correctly, it was about 17 because we did a pick six on that.
I think that's right, 16 or 17?
16, according to profootballreference.com, looking back through it. It was 17-13 at the half. New England led. They jumped out 14-3. Brock Osweiler threw a touchdown pass to make it 14-13. Early second quarter, and then the Patriots hit a field goal right at the half to go up 17-13. They stretched it out to 24-16. And then fourth quarter, 31-16, 34-16. So they had a handle on the game the entire time. You never felt like the Texans were going to win, but they hung around.
So they
think that's what a lot of people expect to happen this week.
They beat the Texans 34-16. The year before that, they beat the Chiefs in the divisional round 27-20. The year before that, they beat the Ravens 35-31. The year before that, the Colts.
Now, the 35-31 game against the Ravens, remember the controversy in that game? What was the big controversy?
In the Ravens game?
In the Ravens game. Because the Ravens, now they're the one team
remember,
that seemed to stand toe-to-toe pretty
started,
well.
If memory serves me correct, that's what started really Deflategate. Because the Ravens started saying stuff, and then the Colts game was the next game, and that's when all you know what
right.
broke loose after that. But the Ravens are the one that kind of started
they did,
those
and,
comments.
And specifically, one of the things that they got on the Patriots was the deception of, remember the formation? The eligible receiver wearing the weird number.
Yes.
And he caught the pass. They didn't cover him, and Harbaugh went crazy. That was that game. And that was a tight game. That the Ravens were right there.
Wasn't
the
there
Ravens are the one team that have gone up there a few times, stood toe-to-toe with them, beat them the one time decisively. The year that they went to the Super Bowl.
That was an AFC championship. That was the year they beat the 49ers in the Super Bowl. Yeah, they beat them.
In the
that
championship.
That was Ray Rice.
Won it going away.
Ran all over them.
And they would have won a second time. Wasn't it a kick to win the game, or was it to tie the game when they missed about the 25-yarder?
The year before, they beat the Ravens 23-20, the year before.
Yeah, so they had an easy game-tying field goal and a throw into the end zone before that field goal that was tight. So maybe the Titans should be talking to the
Ravens.
Didn't
the Ravens also complain about faulty equipment too? Like their stuff wasn't
headsets
working right.
Oh, there's
stuff
always
was going in and out.
Oh yeah.
Isn't that weird? Always happens at Gillette.
Are we going to get any of that this week, or are they not having to worry about that?
That's why I said to Michael Holly, just do it on the up and up.
Yeah.
That's all. Just do it on the up and up. If you're going to win, just do it the right way. All right, we'll come back. We'll talk about all this and more with Floyd Reese. He understands both franchises better than most. So we'll talk to him coming up to kick off the second hour of 3D. That's next.